Suitcoiners are the new type of Bitcoiner that's are chilling or promoting Bitcoin reserve companies. So basically they are doing pump and dumps with like stocks, low cap stocks. But to what you say, you are like, they are a Bitcoin company. I don't think they are a Bitcoin company because they don't do like Bitcoin product. Yeah. They don't do like offer product that allow you to transact with Bitcoin or any related things. They're a company that are raising debt to stack Bitcoin. But there is lots of people that have like, that are using Bitcoin as a store of value in their company. I think it's just like a new iteration of the crypto scams, you know? Mm. I see it as narratives, you know? In 2017, you had like ICOs, people yeah. were selling the dream of the old blockchain world. You would have like blockchain IoT that would like track the food with blockchain. Then you had like, in 2020, you had like the DeFi. So that was literally like yield farming that were like just hidden ICOs. So we've reached this point now where there is no more narrative to part people with their Bitcoin. So they found like ways to hack the fiat market to get like exposure and raise debt. But the problem is that these people will tell you, okay, Bitcoin has value because it's censorship resistant, it's fully auditable, it's fully transportable, it's not a link to your ID, it's like it's it's a new paradigm. Use the argument of Bitcoin, but then they sell you something that has nothing like that, you know? Mm. They say, or Bitcoin is better, or stock is better than Bitcoin, but he has nothing of the property that makes Bitcoin good.
Hello guys, welcome once again to Bitcoiner Podcast. Today, we're going to have an exciting episode. This is the part two of one of my recent partners in the podcast. Yeah, we're going to discuss a lot of fun things here today. I hope that you have enjoyed the last episode. It was quite fun. It is great. She's the host of 21, ask 21 questions to Bitcoiner. So she's awesome. So I hope that you enjoy that. But today we will continue that. Also, we're almost finishing the season 4, a couple of episodes left, and then we will be back around September, October. Probably October. But yeah, we still have a lot of episodes to record. But yeah, just letting you know that we're almost at the finish of the season 4. But anyways, I want to extend this little intro. Let's go into the dirty things. I want to welcome today to Gigi that he is the co-host of Le Boncoeur Bitcoin, and also he's part of Bull Bitcoin. So welcome, man.
Hello, Juan. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you, man. I don't know. First of all, I want to ask you, who is worth in your podcast? Science or you, man? I mean, doing the
who is questions. The host in my podcast?
No. Who's the worst? The worst.
Oh, doing... who's the worst? In which sense?
Who makes the dirty questions, the tough questions?
I think it's both of us. It's both of us. Usually we do the good cops, bad cops, you know? And I'm usually the bad cops, you know? I'm the one that goes into like very deep conspiracy theories, and that's challenging maybe a bit more the guests. And Science, my co-host, is more the one that's more tempered, you know?
Okay. Well, we're going to discuss a little bit more about your podcast because you're cool guys. You're based in France. We'll discuss a little bit about that. But first, if you can share a little bit, the usual, a little bit about your background. So people that probably have never heard about you or the podcast, what is your background? Then we will talk about your Bitcoin rabbit hole journey.
Sure. I'm Gégé. I'm in my 30s. I live in France. I'm born and raised in France. I've been traveling a lot over the last like 4 years in Latin America. So I'm very interested into like expatriation, like tax optimization, like sovereign individual thesis kind of. I'm from a humble background in France, and I've been hired by Bull Bitcoin because I was shitposting a lot on Twitter for many years, and Francis liked what I was doing. So when we launched in Europe, he was like, with Theo, they hired me to do like content, so social media, a YouTube channel, content creation in general. And that's what I do. And I have a podcast on the side with Science, where we talk about Bitcoin, tax optimization, expatriation, and location arbitrage, basically. Because we found out that in the political landscape in France, after the election of Milei, there was like a lot of people that were starting to talk about like liberalism in France. And that's something new because we are a very socialist country. We have the highest tax to GDP in the world. We have 48% of the whole whole economy of the country that's taxation. So that's half of the economy that's taxes and government stuff. And we wanted to provide people with solutions. And for us, the solution is, because at the end of the day, if you are a liberal and you want to like reduce the size of government, there is not like that many things you can do. And lots of people on Twitter, they are like, oh, we're going to elect someone, but I think election is a dead end. So we focus on like location arbitrage, online business, and Bitcoin.
Okay, that's cool, man. Yeah. I have heard a little bit about the story of France, and I know that you're good doing strikes as well. So
yeah, but at the end of the day, strikes doesn't work. You know, like in France, really? We have tradition of doing strikes, but it doesn't work much. Like you need to treat government as company, and life is all an arbitrage. If you go on strikes, but the next Monday you go to work and you pay your taxes and you shut your mouth, nothing changed. You know, You need to reduce your attack surface, basically. So at the end of the day, why people, fund government with their taxation, and they pay tax because if they don't pay tax, the government will seize their assets, you know? But if you have Bitcoin, you can reduce your attack surface. And when the government comes at you, you're like, you're more like easygoing. For example, me, I realized the power of Bitcoin in this sense during the lockdowns because I was living in Paris back then and I didn't want to wear the mask against the COVID. And one day I received like a fine because I was in the tube in the underground and I was already all in Bitcoin back then. And I was like, okay, what's going to happen if I don't pay my fine? And I realized that because I was in Bitcoin, there was nothing it could do to prevent me from not paying these tax. So I've realized the power of Bitcoin in this sense at this time, because the aim in life, if you want to be free, is to be like either like a multi-billionaire that has like companies and lawyer where they can settle their company in like different jurisdictions and they can be kind of like censorship resistant in some way, you know, with like very strong lawyers and structures. Or if you're a gypsy or a gangster, you know, because these people work with cash. They don't have like bank accounts and stuff like that. And like in France, if like these people, they never pay their fines and nothing happened to them. You know, it's only the taxpayer that pay his fines, you know, like the average guy, the average Joe, because this guy is scared of being seized if he don't comply, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, how do you first stumble into Bitcoin? What was your first interaction?
Oh, that's pretty dumb, man. I had a bit of money saved. I wanted to invest because I have a bit of money saved. I read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Poor people work for money. Rich people make money work for them. I have a bit of money saved because I was working as a waiter in Paris. And I was like, okay, I need to invest my money. I realized like I don't want to take debt. I realized I could buy like a parking spot. But that's dumb because I'm going to be break even in like 20 years and I'm going to pay like shit tons of taxes.
Absolutely.
And from the top of my mind, I think about Bitcoin because I think I saw eToro ads about Bitcoin. It was like early 2017. And I go on YouTube, I tap down Bitcoin. I found, like, surprisingly enough, I found a video of Bill Gates talking about Bitcoin in a positive way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Somewhere around 2014 or something like that. I'm like, okay, Bill Gates say it's not a scam. Maybe it's not too much of a scam, you know? And I just invest in it and price keep going up. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to invest more. Then in the summer of 2017, I go all in shitcoin. In January 2018, I start slowly to lose money. Then the whole year of 2018, I start watching Andreas Antonopoulos videos. I become a maxi and here I am. I think my Bitcoin journey is pretty like similar to lots of people.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, well, in my case, it was kind of similar. I studied a little bit in the university, but also I think one of the things that made me click was listening to Max Kaiser, you know, back then when he had the Kaiser Report. For me, that helped me a lot. I watched the show because my dad used to watch that show. And
oh, nice.
Yeah.
So your dad was a Goldberg, right?
Kind of, yeah. He wasn't into economics a lot. He also, one of the things that liked a lot about Max is that he sensed that he didn't have an agenda. He was very unapologetic. He had no filter talking about shit about Wall Street and whatever. So, and then when he started talking about Bitcoin and, you know, bringing Jimmy Sons, all these guests, he was like, hey, this is actually a great show. So he told me, like, you should watch it. More like, you know, a father protecting a son, like, hey, you should know how to invest your thing. So learn a little bit about this. And actually, it was a great show. So I like it. And then I start orange peeling more myself. Like, well, back then, Cyphering was already starting to launch his book. That probably every Bitcoiner that are listening already read that. So yeah, it's a quite interesting journey as well. And yeah, all right. I want to open some rabbit holes, but I want to give this thing in a little bit in order. So let's talk a little bit about the bull Bitcoin now that and your show for people that don't know what is. First, we can talk a little bit about your show, the podcast, and then Bull Bitcoin. Guys, we're now partners. So this is actually not, I'm going to be honest, this is not the reason why you're here. It's just because we connected with Theo and Science. And I was like, guys, I love the team. That's why actually we're partners.
I mean, you've met these guys in conferences. So yeah, I'm sure they went pretty wild with you. So
yeah, and they told me, you need to meet Gigi. I was like, all right, I'm going to meet Gigi. They talk nice. A lot about you. So that's why you're here.
Nice.
So yeah, if people already, if people didn't see for some reason, which I think they saw, but we don't know, they skipped the episode with Theo saying, if you can explain a little bit about, I know, I'll tell you first the podcast. Let's talk about the podcast and then about Bull Bitcoin. So you can share a little bit about how you started it and why you started.
The Bunker, as I said, like we wanted to create content around Bitcoin, but you know, I feel like in the Bitcoin content creation game, like you need to find a niche that is more defined than Bitcoin, you know, because there is too many Bitcoin podcasts. And me and Science, we were traveling a lot, like expats life. Me, I lived in lots of country, in UK, in US, in Colombia, in Argentina, and we were always interested about like the sovereign individual thesis, or to like arbitrage locations. And we were very frustrated because a lot of political podcasts, they basically list the problem, but then they never like bring the solutions. So people that listen to them, they feel like addicted to like blaming someone else for their own problem. Even though the problems are real. You know, in France, the government takes half your money. It's a real problem. But at the end of the day, what you're going to do? You're going to keep blaming someone else for your own failure, or you're going to like move forward and like use a gameplay to get richer and get better and just save yourself, which is at the end of the day, the only solution available. Because if you're someone that say, oh, I'm right wing, I'm libertarian, but you actually do the same thing as the lefties, which is like blaming someone else for your own failures, you're at the same level. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, you've identified that the government was the problem and it's not the capitalist like the leftist says, but you're not acting on it and you're still poor and you're still like wage cooking and you're still like paying your taxes. To me, you're still at the same ground level at the lefties, right?
Yeah.
And so how to act and how to like help yourself become a better person with like businesses advice, expatriation advice, tax advice, and of course, Bitcoin.
This is all related to the flag theory, right? As well, right?
Sorry?
This is also related to the flag theory, right? Because the flag theory is like to have a lot of passports in different jurisdictions in order to protect yourself from different attacks.
Yeah, if you can reach that level, that's perfect, you know. But at the end of the day, if you study like Austrian economy and you say you paint yourself as a right-wing capitalist, you have to understand that the solution will not come from someone else. It's by fixing yourself that you're going to fix society. And at the end of the day, the rest is LARPing. And there is so many people in France right now that keep like ranting about like politics. And but at the end of the day, the only thing they want to do is like to vote harder. And that's a dead end. That's a fucking dead end, you know?
Absolutely. And then, so now I get your goal of the podcast. And I think it's somehow is related with bull Bitcoin, right? I think that's some of the values that I have seen as well. So for people that don't know what is bull Bitcoin, you can explain shortly. What is it?
Bull Bitcoin is one of the oldest self-custodian Bitcoin-only exchange. It was founded in 2013 by Francis Pouliot. Back then he was working, he had like a cash desk at the Bitcoin embassy in Montreal, which was like probably one of the first physical hub for Bitcoin. And it's always been like a privacy and cypherpunk values focus. So it's like 100% self-custodial. And to me, it's basically the best tool to use Bitcoin and to have like on-ramp, off-ramp with fiat. Basically, I was in Croatia in holidays last week. And for example, thanks to bull Bitcoin, I can only almost live bankless. For example, I can use Bitcoin on my Lightning wallet and pay someone directly to their bank account. So 2 weeks ago, I was in Croatia. I went to rent a scooter and I didn't want it to use cash or a credit card to pay. So I asked them for their bank details. And I literally like use my Lightning wallet to send the amount to bull Bitcoin. And within like 1 minute, the lady, she received the euros in her bank account. And it's working like that in the whole Europe, in Mexico, in Canada, and in Costa Rica. And that's just like the best user experience. You know, it's a Bitcoin native. There is no altcoin. And it's like optimized for Bitcoin users. You can use Lightning. You can use Bitcoin on chain. You can use Liquid Bitcoin, which is great because, for example, for privacy reasons, if you use bull Bitcoin to stack Bitcoin, you can use Liquid or Lightning to withdraw. And then let's say you do a DCA of 50 euros per week. You can send like 50 euros to your Liquid addresses. And once you get, let's say, 1,000 euro, you can swap on the bull Bitcoin wallet to Bitcoin on-chain. And this Bitcoin on-chain Bitcoin will not be traceable to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's one of the things that I like a lot. And I have seen that you're growing. Even in the Spanish community, I see that you're growing. We need to discuss also to make efforts also in El Salvador, since you have been doing it in Costa Rica and also about that would be great.
And to come back to like Liquid,
mm-hmm.
I think it's people will say Liquid is a shitcoin, it's not real Bitcoin. I totally agree with that. I think it's like it's a gradient. If you want to have privacy on chain, you have different tools. You can either work and earn Bitcoin on the P2P market. Let's say I'm going to see a friend. I'm like, I'm selling you this shirt and I receive this Bitcoin, and it's not private Bitcoin because the person know that's my address, but it's fairly private because there is only one person that know it's yours.
Yeah.
You can use CoinJoin and mix your Bitcoin. You can use Monero. But the thing with Monero is you may end up with like a Bitcoin that have dodgy historics because you use like weird non-KYC swappers. You can also use Lightning, and you can also use Liquid. Liquid is good because it's private by default. So I think it's some people will say, oh, it's a federation. There is like 15 companies that run the network. But again, it's a gradient. Maybe if like the CIA is looking for you because you were financing like terrorism, maybe one day they'll like crack it down. I don't even think so. I'm not technical enough. But for the average pleb, that's super fine.
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis Bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis Bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría.
Yeah, absolutely. I have talked with people of Aqua about the Liquid Federation, well, the Liquid Network and the Federation. Yeah, I have mixed thoughts about that as well. Sometimes I see the utility, sometimes I see more the positive side, in the sense of that it's Liquid is really backed by Bitcoin, so you cannot be a Liquid without Bitcoin. It has a lot of features, not only related to Bitcoin, but you know, like at least in El Salvador, they were trying to do some experiment related, like I don't like to use the word tokens, but the thing is that to do something back with also the government fund, something related to that. I don't remember. It was okay. A long time ago, but they wanted to do something.
Yeah, they have like USD. USD crypto stuff, yeah.
Stable yeah, coins. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. They were avoiding to use shitcoins, but yeah, trying to use the feature of Liquid. But anyways, now I want to ask you something related with France. Always when I meet people from everywhere, I want to know the situation of there. So I know a little bit the context here in Spain that they are super friendly with Bitcoin. No, they're not. So I want to know, how do you see the Bitcoin adoption, let's say, or context related in Spain in terms of the user, the general user, but also, you know, there's a lot of regulation in the EU against it because they're trying to push forward to the digital era, right? That actually they're trying to release on October, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Okay. So Bitcoin adoption in France. I think in your Bitcoin journey, you have different phases.
Mm-hmm.
The first one you discover, the second one you become crypto interested, the third one you get wrecked, blah, blah, blah. And then you become a maxi. And then you have your Bitcoin boom moment where you realize it's like the domino that was missing in your understanding of the world and the solution and everything. And then you get very excited. And then you want to orange peel all your friends and family, and you do that for a year or two. And then you reach the point where you're like, okay, Bitcoin is meant for everyone, but not everyone is meant for Bitcoin, right? Because there is some people you can like give them arguments and try to convince them. They are not designed for it. And it's fair because, you know, the other day I was talking with someone that's doing CrossFit.
Okay.
And for him, people that don't do CrossFit are normies and they don't understand, and he thinks he's right. And I think we're the same with Bitcoin. You know, we think we're right. I mean, the evolution is of the world is proving us right by the days. But still, there is people that don't give a shit. So right now, I don't try to orange peel people as much. But interestingly enough, like over the last like months, people that came to me to talk about Bitcoin are failed entrepreneurs that own money to the government. And they want to stack Bitcoin to be out of reach from government.
Yeah.
And it's great because with this crowd, you don't have to sell them on self-custody. You know, instinctively, by default, they understand the value proposition of self-custody, right? So it's much easier to orange pill this type of people. So Bitcoin adoption is going well in France. I mean, we have a lot of like Bitcoin maximalist meetups in every like city in France. You have like meetups, you have like communities all around the countries. It wasn't the case in 2021. It wasn't the case in 2019. It's something that arise like over the last 3-4 years. And that's a good thing because now the Bitcoin maximalist community, we all know each other. We have kind of conferences through meetups. So it's going great. For the rest, regulation, I'm not even too much interested about that. It's fucked up. They're going to try to push it down most likely. I don't know. Like the EU is doing a push on privacy privacy for everything. You know, now they try to KYC the internet. You need to have like an ID in France if you want to go in a porn website. In UK now, you need an ID to go on Spotify. And they always come with the same like stuff. Oh, it's to protect the children.
Yeah.
They are about to kind of KYC the internet, and that's their goal. So I'm not bullish on regulation at all. I think the European Union is like a parasitic organization, even more than the French government, which is very parasitic, because like the EU, it's a black box. No one knows who is ruling the parliament. Like, for example, in EU, you don't know who is proposing the law. It's the bureaucrats. It's the suit people with suitcase, you know. It's not like democratic at all. It's even worse than like French government. So I'm not bullish on regulation. I don't know what's going to happen next, but it's going to be tougher for sure.
Yeah, actually, I have noticed that you are very open to criticizing the suit corners and also doing a lot of memes. So let's talk a little bit about the suit corners. I think more, let's say, in the US than here in Europe, we have seen growing up, right? So for me, I have been seeing a lot of that on Twitter. Like now, every Bitcoin company, let's say every company wants to be a Bitcoin company to have a treasury on that, right? And also, it's dangerous because for me, it's like, if you had Bitcoin in your company, that doesn't mean that your company will be successful. It's just like, if you don't have a value, then eventually you will fail. But yeah, and there's the other guys that you mentioned that are politics and trying to do regulations. So,
I mean, maybe let's define what's suit coiners.
Yeah, I think that was going to be my question.
That have been like cornered by maybe Plebitor or Francis Puglio on X. I think they were the most vocal. Suit coiners are the new type of Bitcoiner that's are chilling or promoting Bitcoin reserve companies. So basically they are doing pump and dumps with like stocks, low cap stocks. But to what you say, you are like, they are a Bitcoin company. I don't think they are a Bitcoin company because they don't do like Bitcoin product. They don't do like offer product that allow you to transact with Bitcoin or any related things. They are just company that are raising debt to stack Bitcoin. But there is lots of people that have like, that are using Bitcoin as a store of value in their company. You know, at Bull Bitcoin, we are helping like plumbers, like entrepreneurs, and that have like real cash flow and that are saving their time and energy in Bitcoin, you know, but they don't define themselves as a Bitcoin company, you know. But to get back to the the Bitcoin reserve movement, I think it's just like a new iteration of the crypto scams, you know. I see it as narratives, you know. In 2017, you had like ICOs. People were selling the dream of the old blockchain world. You would have like blockchain IoT that would like track the food with blockchain. Then you had in 2020, you had like the DeFi. So that was literally like yield farming that were like just hidden ICOs. Then you had like metaverse, NFTs. It's so retarded. I don't even need to debunk that. Yeah. Then you had like tokenized assets, like tokenized real estate. That's another scam. Then you had like DAO, like autonomous like organization, which is a scam too. And so basically I think they milk the co enough and they don't have enough narrative to get people to send them their Bitcoin to outperform Bitcoin. You know, it's always the same reasoning. Like, we have this super shiny, super Bitcoin that's going to allow you to outperform Bitcoin, right? So they are targeting like Bitcoin holder people, you know? And then you had like the meme coin craze last year, which was like maybe the pinnacle of the nihilism shitcoin trend, you know. That's why I liked the meme coin trend, because it was like, okay, we are a scammer, we want to scam you, but maybe you're gonna make a bit of money by investing early in my Ponzi scheme before I pull the scam, you know.
Yeah,
so I've always liked a meme coin in this sense that it's very honest. They brand themselves as a scam, but they are like, we are a scam, you can make money with the scam, but you can also lose money. So to me, it's more ethical. It's more like transparent. It's more honest, even though it's still shit, but it's more honest. And so we've reached this point now where there is no more narrative to part people with their Bitcoin. So they found like ways to hack the fiat market to get like exposure and raise debt. But the problem is that these people will tell you Bitcoin has value because it's censorship resistant, it's fully auditable, it's fully transportable, it's not a link to your ID. It's like it's a new paradigm. So yeah, they use the argument of Bitcoin, but then they sell you something that has nothing like that, you know?
Exactly.
They say, or Bitcoin is better, or stock is better than Bitcoin, but it has nothing of the property that makes Bitcoin good. So I have a little bit of like a hard time understanding this. I mean, it's okay if you want to invest in these companies, but like people like Jack Mallor, for example, mm-hmm. yeah. he spent like the last 10 years building his brand on, I'm going to die on this hill, the hill of like monetary sovereignty and Bitcoin as freedom. And one day he flips and he's selling like a stock. So I'm like, maybe there is like a misalignment, you know? I just have like weird taste.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that I don't like about that. That's why I want to talk about openly about that, because again, it's good if you have Bitcoin in your treasury, but at the same time, if you're a fiat company or whatever, for me, is that you have to provide value, because I just said, just because you have Bitcoin on it, that doesn't mean that, you know, the company suddenly will be the next Apple or whatever. No, you actually have to be providing value in whatever you're doing, not Bitcoin related at all, if you don't need to. But in the end, for me, it's like, just because you have Bitcoin, that doesn't mean that you will provide value or that your money will be saved just because you're investing in this company. So yeah, and for me, it's that something also that I relate with ETF. On ETF, when they launched those things, were like, for me, it was like a red flag, because you're actually not investing in Bitcoin. You're just tracking the value of Bitcoin with the ETF. It's, again, it's paper Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, and plus, like, these people, they use like false arguments. They are so-called Bitcoiner, but they say, like Sailor, they say you shouldn't spend your Bitcoin. But like literally the Bitcoin white paper is all about like being a spending tool. And Bitcoin is a great spending tool. And they are spreading false narrative. They say you never use Bitcoin for payment because Bitcoin is going to go up in value. But the thing is, like, if you're in Bitcoin, every fiat expenses you do have a Bitcoin opportunity cost. Let's say if I discovered Bitcoin in 2017, when I was buying a cocktail in 2018 with fiat, it's fiat I would have used to buy Bitcoin otherwise. Especially if you're all in Bitcoin, you know, every fiat expensive you do has an opportunity cost in Bitcoin, because if at the end of the month you have like a fiat left, you're going to use them to buy a Bitcoin. So this whole like, I don't want to spend my Bitcoin because it's going to go up in value, is completely retarded, you know? Buying Bitcoin from my bank account to my non-custodial wallet takes like literally 1 minute and a half, okay, with instant SEPA transfer and shit. So this argument is false, first of all. Second of all, and that's Francis that say that, credit to him, and I think that's smart. When you spend your Bitcoin, you tend to be more cautious, because you know the thing you're spending is valuable. So basically, by spending Bitcoin, ironically, you will most likely end up with more Bitcoin than the person that say, I'm not going to spend my Bitcoin because it's going to go up in value, you know? Because they're instinctively, the Bitcoin, you're going to think twice before spending them, right? So that's retarded. And second thing is, like, people say, oh, Bitcoin is like a weapon against the system. We're going to destroy the government because of Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. But how are we going to destroy the government with Bitcoin? It's not because of NGU. It's because one day we will all do commerce with each other in Bitcoin, and we will all be out of the system. So we won't have to pay the middleman, the taxman. So we will starve the beast. And this is how we end government. By actually spending Bitcoin, creating like a peer-to-peer economy and transacting with each other in Bitcoin. And once we do that, we can like opt out from the fiat system and starve the beast. So that's the whole political project of Bitcoin if you want to defend government. It's not like the NGU, you know, that's utterly retarded to me. Yeah, people that say, oh, I'm here for the freedom money, I'm here to defend government, but I refuse to spend my Bitcoin, or dumb ass to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, in El Salvador, we have a different approach in the sense that it's related to what you said. But, you know, El Salvador is like, we use it just at it states at the first line of the wiper that it says we use it as a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. Because that was the main problem in El Salvador, that people were unbanked, because basically for having a bank account, you need an ID. But, you know, the situation in El Salvador is that not everyone can afford, because of the poverty or whatever, to just have your ID to, but they say, but yeah, it could be free, but yeah, but you need to go there. You need transportation to go there. You need to spend money on those things. So. And then to open an account, you need to spend time and whatever. So, but in El Salvador, what everyone had, or most people have still, it's a phone. So with a phone, you can download XYZ wallet and you can start paying with Bitcoin. No middleman. And again, we use it as it is, as a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, that it happens that that's the Bitcoin network, but it also happens that it's Bitcoin, which is the, has the best, features of perfect money, right? So that's one of the things that we use it there in compared to other countries, because other countries use it more like an investment.
You know, this whole, like, at first I was pumped for El Salvador, like in 2021 when they started adopting Bitcoin. But then when they had like this, Bitcoin City stuff, there was like rich American Bitcoiner coming to like a poor country saying like, oh, we're gonna, I felt like they were like projecting, meaning that they were like, oh, we found the key, the what's the stone in Harry Potter? The philosophical stone, which is Bitcoin. And these dumb Salvadorian, they need to know better because that's what's going to save them. And we're going to impose them Bitcoin, like bottom down. But that's not the way it works, you know? Like,
yeah, agreed.
I found it a bit like, I don't know if that's the correct term, but like patronizing and very like the same whole like, oh, we're going to help the African. We're going to send them money. Before people adopt Bitcoin, they need to understand what's the problem first. And then they need to understand the value proposition of Bitcoin, right? And to understand that, you need lots of like, I mean, it's not that easy. And I don't know if it's true. You're going to tell me.
Yep.
When they passed like the law in 2021, basically they say, okay, now we are accepting Bitcoin. It's legal tender, and Bitcoin was like $60,000. Apparently there was like groups of scammers that were going in like very remote villages in El Salvador with, you know, these Bitcoin coins. And they were going to the village and they were like, hey guys, this coin cost like $60K, I can sell it to you for like $5K. And people in the villages, they were pulling the money together to give the scammer $5K, which was a big sum of money. And they were like, okay, we bought something that cost 60. But I don't know if it's true or not. I think it's true. But it shows that like people didn't understand at all what was Bitcoin. And like, I feel like most people in El Salvador back then were more about like, okay, I just want to have enough money to pay my food, you know? And it's a privilege to think about like central banking, defending government, making the spiritual revolution with Bitcoin. People that are going to work to pay for their food for the evening and to pay for their rent, they don't have time to think about that, you know? You're not going to save them. They're not going to do the extra steps to understand Bitcoin, how to self-custody. They're just going to work, get paid in dollar and spend it. And anyway, they don't have savings, so they don't give a shit.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll try to remember everything that I want to say because my brain go fast and sometimes I forget. But yeah, probably that's the first time that I'm hearing this story, but it could be true. I don't know, but it could be true. Second of all, it's that, yeah, I totally agree with you. That's why when people ask me like, you know, how's the Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador now that is not a legal tender anymore, whatever. So for me, because I have most of my friends are the ones that are doing, in El Salvador are the ones that are pushing towards the Bitcoin projects, let's say Node Nation, they are working in the public schools in order to kids understand Bitcoin, to use everything like what's money, but also how to run a node, but also how to mine, whatever. So what I'm trying to say is that, again, as you said, it's not more than imposed that how to use Bitcoin as, you know, in the phone, the UXO UI, it's more about what it's money. But of course, that takes years. Takes time to understand that. So that's what they're currently pushing the government, but also the, you know, the Bitcoin education institutions that are out there. So both are right now working separately, but for my understanding is the same goal to people, eventually the young, because they're working more in the younger generation to understand what is actually money. So that's one thing that actually we didn't have it, and talking not just in El Salvador, the rest of the world, right? We just knew one system, but right now they're trying to explain that what is money and the difference between the system that we had. So that will take a lot of years. So for me, it's like, yeah, we're using Bitcoin again. Some of them are using it, as you said, probably an investment tool just to pay. But the others, because of the necessity of some to do some transactions, they pivot into Bitcoin. But yeah, there was a lot of scammers as well. I didn't hear that story, but I heard some others that, for example, actually we passed a law or a regulation that it was to protect from shitcoins. El Salvador just permitted Bitcoin. But yeah, I have heard that, for example, ZC was trying to open, a headquarter of Binance in El Salvador, and they sent it away like, no, man, you're not going to open a headquarter here. So yeah, a lot of things happening right now there. So,
and even the concept of mass adoption, you know, some Bitcoiner are very like attached to it. Mass adoption. Bro, at the end of the day,
Bitcoin is hyper-Bitcoinization.
We shouldn't rush for mass adoption. It may never come. I think Pareto law apply to Bitcoin. Because if you go in the street and you ask a random person, hey, do you want to have your net worth on a seed plate in your garage with no inheritance plan? And if you fuck it up, you lose all your wealth. Most people will say, oh, you're crazy. It's not even thinkable. So by rushing mass adoption, we just like onboard people that aren't crazy enough to use Bitcoin in a sovereign way. And they end up using custodial services. And I think it's harming Bitcoin, because at the end of the day, if you think about fiat used to be gold. Okay. One day, people started putting their gold in a bank vault, and the bank was like giving them a paper coupon saying like, okay, we have like 10 grams of gold in our bank vault. We give you a coupon that's redeemable for 10 grams. And people started traded the coupon, you know? But if you do that in a long enough time frame, the same way they did with gold that become fiat, they will break the interoperability in between the coupon. So if people start trading and exchanging the Bitcoin paper coupon, in a long enough time frame, we're going to end up in the same shit we are with fiat. It's going to be depegged, or one day the custodial will be wrecked, and in order to not break the economy, they will depeg it. In a long enough time frame, we are not going to break the wheel if we are not like hardcore on self-custody. Because this paper, a Bitcoin coupon, it's funny, because the same people that criticize fiat and that criticize like going out of the gold standard, they are doing the same shit with Bitcoin. So we need to be very strict on like self-custody and not allow people that say that a coupon is the same as Bitcoin. So I'm fine with just having like crazy criminals or people that own money to the government or hardcore cypherpunk in the community, because I know that these people value self-custody, and at the end of the day, they're going to protect Bitcoin. And because, you know, people say they can do whatever they want with their paper Bitcoin, it doesn't impact me. I think that's being clueless. Because the people that set the price of gold with the paper instrument, the ETF and things like that, they impact the price of the guy that owns physical gold. So in a long enough time frame, if these paper coupons get used more and more and get standardized, and most people use this coupon to trade Bitcoin, it's going to impact the price of people that have Bitcoin in self-custody. I think it may, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're in the point of the podcast I told you that we have before continue, and then we're going to start wrap it up. But we have two games in the podcast, an official game and another game that...
I'm terrible with games. I'm going to be your worst guest.
You're going to be great, man. So one is the official one that everyone knows, that is that my previous guest have a question from my next guest. and then the other one is a competition. Yeah, it's crazy. So right now people...
I know Saida. She's a friend. I had her in my podcast. She's great. I love her.
And you have been in her podcast as well, right?
Yeah. So I'm sure she cooked a good question for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so that was my previous guest, guys. So now I'm going to share it with you. That's her question. And when we finish recording, you will have the opportunity to make the next question to the person that I just told you, but we won't reveal who it is yet. So let's go.
Hi, JJ. I hope you're well. You were on my podcast not so long ago, and I have a very fond memory of you talking about how women shouldn't really be involved in finance or Bitcoin. And so my question to you is this the reason there are no women who work for Bull Bitcoin? That's it. Thank you. Bye.
She tried to corner us. And she's trying to corner me. Okay. So first of all, she misinterpret what I said in her podcast. Please, guys, go in the podcast. That's not what I say. I don't think women are optimized for financial decisions. And that's clear. You know, in finance, in anything, there is no woman. That's by nature. I don't think they're optimized for that, but there is lots of like women that are good at it, but they are more of the exception than the rule. You know, Saida is a great example because she's very smart and she's very beautiful. She's very hot. And you see, you can be hot, beautiful and smart at the same time.
Of course.
So Saida, I see where you go. And that's wrong because there is a woman working for Bull Bitcoin. Uh-huh. She's doing a compliance. I won't say her name. I don't know if she's public about it, or a compliance person in Canada is a woman and she's in the team and it's going great. And yeah, we have like no problem if we, you know, Francis, the way he hire people, it's very, mood based. So most people that are in Bull Bitcoin, it's people that met Francis in barefoot in a beach in Costa Rica or somewhere else. And
really?
Francis saw them, he talked to them, he had like a great conversation and he hired them. Like for me, for example, he hired me. He doesn't even know my background. He doesn't even know what I was working before. And he doesn't even know my university or anything like that. He just hired me because he saw me on Twitter and he liked what I said and Theo recommended me and he was like, okay, let's go. So I think if there is like a competent woman that's going to fit a need that we have, he's going to hire her. Yeah.
That's cool.
But the thing that we came back to the same problem. The thing is like competent woman in the field that we're working on, because most of the Bull Bitcoin employees are technical person, devs, and people like that. So finding a woman that's a dev, that's a Bitcoin maximalist, that have like cypherpunk ethos, and that's competent, they exist. And shout out to them, but they are pretty rare.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need to protect them.
Saida, she tried to corner me. I see you, Saida. I see you.
You know that we were talking because I was in her podcast as well. We actually recorded our episodes almost together. So okay. One another. So yeah, it was back the time when I made public the announcement that we are partners. And it was also back the time that Theo and Science was here. So let's be honest, guys. You're very unapologetic. You make questions without filter. So I love that vibe. And I told her, like, you know who they are? Who they are? You know this guy? So please drop whatever you want. I'll be the host too. That's why she throw you that bomb.
Nice, nice. Let's go. I like
it. Yeah. So talking about people that you know. So the second game of the podcast is called the Alphabet Game. It's a very stupid game, but I don't know how people are very engaged on it. So for people that don't know, the Alphabet Game is that it's just a simple game that is how fast Bitcoiners write the alphabet from A to Z in order. And we have a score, and I'm going to share with you the score by the end. But just let me tell you that your friends, my friends are very competitive.
I need to say A, B, C.
I'm sharing you right now in the...
Bro, the thing is, like, I'm not English speaker. I don't even know if I can finish it.
No.
If you ask me in French, I can do it, but in English, I'll just share
with you in the chat. So that's the alphabet. So you need to type A, B, C, D.
Okay. So I'm not going to be that bad, I guess. And if I make a mistake, what's happening? I'm starting from zero.
Yeah. So I'm going to explain you how it works. Once you type A, the timer starts. And when you type C, don't press enter. Otherwise, it will erase your time. And you have three opportunities to do that. The best score is the one that we'll keep. And of course, we don't trust, we verify. So you need to send me your best score. A screenshot of this. I'm going to give you just three shots. So this one, let's say this one is the first
three
one.
Sure, shots, yeah. A, one. B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Good. That's your first score. That's your official first score. Right?
Okay, what's the best?
You want to know the best timing right now?
Like Théo and Science, what did they do? How much did they do?
You just want to beat them. Hold on, I can give you their score right now before you continue. Theo and Science. I won't give you the best score. I'm just going to give you Theo's and Science. And by the end, I will show you who has the best score. I have the whole score here. So Theo has 6.945 seconds.
6.9?
Yeah. And Science
has... In 6 seconds?
Yeah, and Science had 8.862 seconds.
What? So they're twice faster than me?
But they became very competitive, man. That's what I tell you.
I'm shit. Like 6 seconds, that's not feasible. Let's be honest. Okay, I'll start again. I'll do a bit better, but I won't do under 10. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
You're getting better.
No, 6 seconds? I don't believe that.
Yeah, I saw that, man. I saw it.
Bro, Theo is a psycho. That's not possible. How many cigarettes did he had? Maybe he was like on coffee and cigarettes and he was like... Brrr.
Do you know that they always use sunglasses? We use sunglasses, so... That's
I should have used my sunglasses somewhere.
You can use them. I don't know if it's going to be better or not for you, but...
Bro, I'm going to call them out. I think they were shitting. They had like an AI. Oh, I can do a last one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's try to go to 10. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
10. Yeah, well done. Well done. Well then, you make
it's
it to 10.
It's not too bad.
No, it's not. Actually, you beat Saida.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. You want to see the whole score? I can share with you.
I'm terrible. Like.
No, you're not that terrible. I'm going to share with you. Hold on. So you can see that there are crazy people in the... but you need to stop sharing your screen.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Now I have that. So here it is. So probably you know most of them. So here are the craziest Bitcoiners.
Damn! 5 seconds. Wow.
Jordi, he's from South Atlantis. He has 5.9.
That's pretty autistic, man.
Adam, this is not Adam Back. This is Adam from... Adam and Cole are from Coinos. the Canadian guy. Kiki, I don't know if you know her. Probably yes.
I'm one of the worst.
Nah, you're okay. Landavaso, he's the one doing Rewind Bitcoin. Science, of course. Kenobi. Drew, he's from Blackstream. Then Saida. Don't worry.
If I train, bro, I can come out with like 8, maybe. Yeah, sure. We need to do contests on Twitter.
Do you think it will work?
Yeah, that would be fun.
All right, so you see, that was the alphabet game. It's crazy, these guys.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
No, it'll be fine. We'll do another context ed. And then people are prepared to compete. And you know what? Another thing is that when you're on the screen, I think you have more pressure that when
sure.
you do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure.
100%. All right, so we're going to start wrapping up. I want to finish the podcast with something that you share at the beginning of the podcast, that you have been traveling a lot. So let's talk about a little bit your experience in Latin America, that you have been living there. Probably want to share some experience and a little bit comparison between Europe and Latin America, and if there's any Bitcoin context related to your experience, please feel free to share that.
Yeah, I was in Latin America. I was in Medellin first, in Colombia. I spent Colombia. Like 6 months there. It was awesome. I really liked the vibe. I fell in love with the country. But the good thing in Colombia is like there is lots of expats. So it's easier to make like a network. And basically like first week, I posted on X that I was on Medellin, and I had like 3 or 4 Bitcoiners that came to me, and I, basically within a week or two, I had like a group of Bitcoiner friends over there. So yeah, Medellin is great. I'd say I felt safer in Medellin, because when I went in Colombia, most of the people in France, they were like, oh, why are you going to Colombia? There is cartel, drugs, and it's unsafe. Mm-hmm. But actually, I felt safer in Medellin than I felt in Paris. And it's proven by data, because they did like survey. And even though the homicide rate is higher in Medellin and in Colombia in general, people mm-hmm. will feel safer in Medellin or Bogota than they feel in Paris or Nantes in France. Because in Colombia, you don't have like small thugs and small stuffs, you know, it's just like narcos that are killing each other. And if you avoid like walking around with a Rolex and shit, you won't have that much problem. And you don't feel unsafe. Like you don't see like groups of youths, and there isn't the drunk ass people too much. There is not such a thing. And the funny thing is that I spent 6 months in Medellin. I did see no fight. I didn't felt scared like even once. I was like all the time great. And I was traveling around like the city, you know, I didn't stay in the rich area. Before coming back to France, I go for 2 weeks in Montreal. And the first night in Montreal, there is like a homeless with a screwdriver that almost tried to stab me because I don't want to give him a cigarette. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I feel like these days, like it's almost safer in the southern hemisphere than it is in the Western world, kind of, you know? So that's interesting to notice. And no, I think Latin America is great if you travel there, because it's great for networking, because you will meet a lot of expats that work in tech or that does like Wi-Fi money. So you will find like-minded individuals. For my experience in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, it was different. First of all, I feel like Buenos Aires feels more Europe than Paris.
Mm-hmm.
More of like, because the ethnicity there is mainly like European immigrants. So it feels more Europe than Paris. Paris is more mixed. Paris is more brown. Paris is more almost messy, you know. So if you go in Buenos Aires, you won't have like a big gap, you know, like because in Colombia, people are late. There is music everywhere. People dance. Argentina is more like Europe. People are very smart. They're all well educated. That's the reason why I don't understand why they are a poor country. I mean, I know because of socialism, but there is less of these fun vibes. So if you go to party and like have fun, I don't think Argentina would be like the best place. But if you go for dating, Argentina is much better than Medellin, because I feel like in Colombia, it's not They don't really like to date gringos, the locals, because they had so many like bad gringos coming for sex tourism and drugs. Mm-hmm. That it's not something well seen by other locals. But in Argentina, it's cool, you know. And yeah, Argentina is great. I think there is lots of opportunity there because the people are very smart. They are well educated and the economy is like super down. But I think Argentina will rise again. I truly believe that. I don't know if it's going to be with Milei or with someone else, but I'm very bullish on this country as a whole. They have lots of like natural resources. Funny story is that I was living in the area of La Cripta, which is a group of maximalist people. They have like a hub there. And I didn't knew I was living like 2 minutes away from their hub. So I didn't got the chance to meet them, but I met some of them in Prague this year. So next time I'm going to go in Argentina, I'm going to go visit them. And yeah, that's it.
All right. One question that I have, because it resonated in my mind that you said that the difference right now that it's getting more dangerous or let's say safer in the South. What do you think is pivoting into this direction that is safer in the South than in the Western?
I mean, first of all, I think there is still more homicide in Colombia than in France, for example. I mean, not as much as in the States, in big cities. But so it's more of a feeling, you know?
Okay.
Because first of all, in this country, there is more cohesion. Everyone is Christians, you know? So there is more common ground in between all these people and the family structure is stronger. So in Europe, so first of all, we are declining countries because of socialism and all sorts of things. But now it's too mixed up, you know? People are not like related in any way to their neighbors. You know, they have no common values. They have no common ethnicities. They have no common religion.
Interesting.
And yeah, the family structure also is stronger. I was in Africa 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And again, over there, the family structure is like different, but I don't know how to say. I think our Western civilizations are declining because of basically socialism and mass immigration and the loss of religion. Because in a society where you have too much comfort, people lose ground with religion. They lose like the core of what's make a civilization good in the first place.
Their values, right?
Sorry?
Your values as well.
Yeah, sure, your values.
Your core values.
But also the fact that you believe in something after death. Because if you don't believe in something after death, you're going to be need to enjoy my life as much as possible right now. And it's a bit nihilistic, you know? But if you believe on like life, something after death, you're going to be okay. I'm here for a higher purpose. So you're going to act differently. And I think, yeah, but like getting back to the meme, you know, strong men create good times create weak men. And I feel like the pinnacle of the weak men were the boomers, you know, but we are still in this like stuff. So we will need in our Western countries to touch the ground. And as long as the fridge are full, we won't have like change, right? So the whole Western countries are going down. That's for sure. Because let's take the example of France.
Mm-hmm.
In France, we have like a death circle, which is people are getting taxed too much. So they leave the country. The people that have wealth and that create wealth leave the country because they are taxed too much. The more people that create value leave the country, the less the government make profit from taxes. So the more they have to increase the taxes, the more they increase the taxes, the more people leave. So at the end of the day in France right now, all the people that were creating values, that were working on internet and that can leave, that don't have like business model that they can put somewhere else in the world, they have left. So, and this cycle is keep going, you know? So I think we will need to touch the floor before it rise again. So yeah, that's my take.
No, yeah, it's interesting because I have some French friends and we have been talking about that, that live here in Barcelona. And yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, it's like, in this, I'm just thinking that, yeah, you try to find a better solution. Let's say that depending on which city you can find a better, for me, it's not a better solution. It's just, you're making the failing a bit slower. Because in the end, as you said, most countries here in Spain, for example, is also socialist. So they're having the same struggles that the France, right? So, and if you compare to countries that are using, let's say Bitcoin in this case, that they had a value proposition of to have a long time preference, you can see how little by little it's rising. Then you can see the debt cycle that we have. Not just in Europe, but also in the US with the printing money that is not backed by anything. And so you can see the decline little by little, right? So in the end, it's.
And democracy is a dead end in France because let's look at the data. Mm-hmm. Half of the voting base in France, half of the people that vote in France have more than 50 years old. And in France, we don't have a retirement system where you capitalize for yourself. It's the whole country. It's basically the people that work that pay for the people that retire, right? And so mm-hmm. these people won't vote for a more liberal leader because they are either retired or going to retire, right? So you have half of the taxpayer. Then if you take the working population, most of them are on benefits. If you take the whole French population, there is 70% of the population that is net beneficiary of government money. So you have only 30% of the population that's actually producing more than they receive from the government, right? So it's disproportionate. So 70% of the population is like net beneficiary of government help. So they won't vote against their objective interest, right? Let's say I'm getting money from the government. Why am I gonna vote for less government, right? So it's a dead end. It's not possible that a liberal leader is elected because most people receive money from government.
But do you think at some point it's gonna change? Because Europe in general, it's an old continent, because as you said, that there's a lot of old people, but eventually all those people are going to be gone. So I don't know if that could change.
But yeah, the boomer will go to death, but then it's going to be the new people that retired.
Millennials. So it's going to be the same cycle, right?
And in addition to that, you have like the debt problem because the government is on deficit. So let's say if the government is a normal company, the French government has been losing money since 1974. Basically, they never had like a positive budget in their balance sheet. So balance sheet is simple. It's like how much they receive and how much they spend. They didn't have like a positive balance sheet for the last like, 50 years. Ironically, it's when they started to debase a currency from gold, right? In the 1970s. But the thing is like, now we are like very, very in debt. Like the French government is very, very in debt. So whatever we do, we need to pay the interest of the debt. And paying the interest of the debt is like almost one of the biggest expenses for the government budget, you know? They pay more on like debt interest than they pay on military, for example. And it keep going up. So it's a spiral, you know? So I don't want to be like blackpilled, but I'm going to be blackpilled. I don't think there is nothing that's going to save like this government and this country, we're gonna need to go to shit in order to reborn. So I would happily define myself as an accelerationist. So I want the process, because I know the system is like for failure. I want it to fail as quick as possible. So anything that can accelerate the fall of the empire is good to take, right? And I really advise people to save their wealth in Bitcoin, because at the end of the day, if you have Bitcoin, you're pretty like bulletproof. You can travel with your wealth. They can't seize you. They can put you in jail, but we have time until they put people in jail for these reasons. And that's like the best asset against what's going to happen in this country. Yeah. So yeah, I'm very black-pilled on the future of the government and like the state of the country in our Western hemispheres.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So last two questions. Two are very short. That I just want to know your opinion that if do you think it's going to be then way easier, or how do you think it's going to be the implementation of the digital euro? Because now it's coming.
I don't believe in digital euro. Digital euro, it's a farce. It's a bullshit. Yeah, it's a false flag. It's whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Every fucking central bank in the entire world that tried to implement CBDCs failed. Even China is failing to have adoption on their CBDCs. America dropped it. Jamaica tried, they failed. Nigeria tried, they failed. A Scandinavian central bank, they stopped the project. Switzerland central bank, they stopped the project. Latin American central bank, they stopped the project. Almost every central bank and government is in the world is like either failing at adopting their CBDC or changing gears. It's, and I've been saying that for like 2 or 3 years. But now it's pretty clear that the Trojan horse to get that is stablecoins. In America, they don't hide it. You know, that's like the horse they picked, you know, because it's great to export American debt around the world. And it's better to gain adoption because CBDC, it would be very hard to get people to adopt it because people already pay with their phones and we have to realize how it's going to work. Are they be competing with private banks? I think it's doomed to fail. That's my take. I mean, we will see how they try to implement that in Europe. But I would be, don't underestimate European government and European Union capacity to be bad at implementing new technologies. You know, they're going to be terrible. I'm not even sure it's going to be fully feasible. They've been working on it for like 5 years. Let's see how it goes. I think in America and all around the world, they choose their horse. It's stablecoins, because stablecoins are, maybe for them, they are not as good as CBDCs, but like Tether, they fully complied with regulators. Let's say if the American government send like a request to Tether, they don't even like check. They're like, okay, we freeze these accounts, right?
Yeah.
And maybe they will implement like very strong chain analysis on it. Maybe they will try to have KYC rails on it. I don't know what they're going to do. But I don't think the CBDC, the way most people see it, will be successfully implemented, even though fiat is already a CBDC, right? If you think about it, fiat is already fully digital. Fiat is already fully censorable. Fiat is already melting like an ice cube in terms of inflation. I mean, like at the end of the day, my money in my banking app is already a CBDC. If the French government want to shut me down, they can. So, okay, maybe a CBDC would be like more easy to do. Yeah, but like, I don't think that's like even like a debate at this point, right? I don't know. To me, fiat is already a CBDC and people already use fiat. So I don't give a shit about like the whole CBDC debate.
Yeah, and one thing that you mentioned also that is really interesting is that Tether holds a significant amount of the US treasuries in the US.
Yeah. I mean, now it's like Tether was smart, you know, they were buying bonds. So the American government can't technically shut them down like that unless they seize all their assets. They have power, you know, now. Because they have like power as much of as a sovereign nation, you know?
Yeah, like 130 billion, something like that.
Yeah. And Tether has adoption, you know, all around the world. So I think that would be like dumb from American people to government to go after Tether, you know?
Probably, yes. Right.
Because they are already fully compliant and they are a good way for America to export their national debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be. It's really easy. Just another way to export the dollar. Absolutely. Gigi, we're going to wrap it up. We have been talking a lot. We can do like 3 hours of this, but thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the podcast. Just tell people where can they find you and let's go.
Thank you, Juan. That was a pleasure to talk to you. You can find me on X, but I'm like Turbo Shadow Ban with my personal account, which is GGLSMR. And you can also find me on Le Bunker. You can link the profile and people will find me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to add it into the podcast notes. All right, let's go. So guys, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope that you enjoyed. See you next week. Ciao.
Thank you, man.